From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the bleachers at a basketball tournament with two fathers watching their sons on the court. The game was part of a demanding tournament schedule, the type that requires many miles on the road and nights in hotel rooms. The schedule, they admitted, was overwhelming. Were their children even having fun, and should they consider quitting? This story was told by one of the dads, David McGlynn, in an op-ed in the New York Times. David's son, Galen, did quit his high school basketball team, but with the time he gained being free from travel and tournament schedules, he joined new clubs, he said he made new friends, he even took up a less time-consuming sport, and his dad said he ended up being a lot happier, he found balance. That story is not uncommon, and I bet you a lot of parents are agreeing with this. An estimated 35 million kids between the ages of 5 and 18 play organized sports each year in the United States. While millions of them are treated for injuries, many are also treated for sports-related stress. Student athletes are feeling the pressure to perform, to win games, to win scholarships, to meet the expectations of their parents and coaches. UR Medicine is hosting a sports summit next month with the goal of helping students, parents, and coaches learn how to achieve greater balance in the lives of young athletes. We're previewing the summit this hour with a discussion about the value of nutrition, mindfulness, yes, sleep, and more. We're hearing from some local student athletes about their experiences and some other guests as well with different perspectives. And I want to welcome, first of all, Dr. Michael Maloney. He is the director of University Sports Medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center. He's been here before. He's the Red Wingstein doctor. And we're going to be able to talk about the D-Sports Summit coming up. Dr. Maloney, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Jane Andrews is nutrition and labeling manager for Wegmans Food Markets, who is also an athlete herself, I'm happy to say.
Trying.
You're doing some great stuff, so it's great to see you. Thank you for being back on the program here. Kayla Purcell is a student athlete at Webster Schrader High School. Kayla, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Erica Denman is the owner and founder of Balance Fitness and Yoga in Webster. She's an instruction specialist with the Webster Central School District. Erica, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And Lindsay Stone is a college-bound swimmer. Welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Going where in the fall?
The University of Notre Dame.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
I was just reading Lindsay's story, and we were just talking before the hour began, that you're a college-bound swimmer, but you almost quit in the seventh grade?
Yes.
How come?
It was my first year.
Get right on that microphone for me.
First year swimming for high school, and it was a very demanding sport, swimming was. And being a 12-year-old surrounded by all these high school athletes was very stressful.
What was the schedule? Like, give me best you remember, like, say, a weekend or weekday schedule that you recall.
Well, preseason was probably what's most fresh in my mind, I guess. 4 hours to 5 hours a day, Monday through Saturday. That was grueling. And then you get into the week, you have 2.5 hours every day with an hour morning practice Tuesday and Thursday. So it was a lot as a 12-year-old. And I think it was just the mental aspect that really got to me, and ended up seeing a mental sports psychologist, and that really helped and really turned it around. And I'm obviously happy I stuck with it.
Well, no doubt about it. You're doing wonderfully. But, you know, that experience that you had is certainly not uncommon. Did you talk to family about it? Did you feel burned out? Did you tell them you're thinking quitting?
Yeah, I went to my parents and definitely told them that I wanted to quit and wasn't really for me. Maybe I wanted to try something else, maybe no sports at all. And they actually, it was almost like a sort of, I don't want to call it an intervention, but they contacted a sports psychologist, came home from school one day, and they said, all right, we have someone coming to see you. She's coming to the house. She's going to talk to you about swimming and how you feel about it mentally, your relationship with your coach, your teammates, all the work that you put in, stuff like that. And I was obviously a little hesitant at first, a little angry with them for springing it on me, but I ended up seeing her for another 3 to 4 years and owe a lot of that success and mental aspect of my sport to her. So
you were hesitant, but how long did it take you to get comfortable at least talking about those issues?
After one hour visit with her, I'd say I was pretty comfortable bringing it up, and we ended up meeting once every other week for quite a while, at least a year, and then I continued seeing her once a month.
So what was it about those conversations that took some of that stress away from the experience for you?
A lot of it at first was with my coach, just because he comes off as a little bit harsh and scary at first, and I didn't really have the relationship with him that I have now. So at first it was working with that, and then obviously the training schedule was grueling, so coming into each session of training with a different mental state. So if I wasn't really into it one day, just coming up with a way to get psyched up, whether that was through music or coming up with a daily goal, a weekly goal, a monthly goal, something to work toward to get through each day.
But you didn't cut down on the actual schedule.
No, never cutting down on the actual swimming.
Could you have cut down on the schedule and ended up where you are today?
I don't think so. I think it's really a demanding sport, and unlike other sports, you really need a pool, and it's the swimming that actually helps you to get better. It's not like something like running or drylands is really going to do it. You really have to put the work in the pool.
So this is, what I want to ask you next might not even be fair. You're so close to it, and you're going to school for it, and you're going to do, I'm sure you're going to do wonderfully there. But Lindsay, you're 18 years old, right?
Right.
Do you think about young girls who were, you were 12, right? You were kind of really struggling with the stress of this and thinking about quitting and feeling like you were getting burned out. Do you wish it was a little less on the hours? I mean, did you feel like even with that psychological help that you got, did you have enough balance?
It's definitely a lot. The balance is tricky. With school, it's obviously demanding, and going from swimming to school, back to swimming, trying to find time for homework, things like that. The hours are crazy. So, of course, if I could have maybe another morning off or something like that. But my coach definitely did a good job in giving our bodies rest, too. So he would talk to us for a day if he really felt like we needed time out of the pool. So he was definitely keeping track of where our bodies were and giving us the rest we needed to continue. But I seem to make it out fine in both academics and athletics. So
your academics were good. That's good.
Yeah, so
obviously you're going to Notre Dame. I think they care about those there.
So it worked out, but it's definitely demanding, and it takes the right person.
Yeah. Did you have peers who burned out of athletics, quit?
What was that?
Did you have peers who over the years burned out?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. And you go through cycles. I know this past spring, if you hit a certain point where you start to plateau, and obviously swimming's based on time, so let's say you stop dropping time, it can get to be hard, and sometimes you just need to take a couple weeks off of practice, stuff like that. But I've definitely seen girls who have quit mid-season, just a lot of stress. I know my first year in seventh grade, we had a girl who I'd looked up to for many years, and she was a senior, and she went to our coach about midway through the season and came up to him and just said, I can't do it anymore, I'm quitting. And that was the last we saw of her. And she had a twin sister also on the team, actually. So it was a very interesting dynamic, and you'll see it a lot. It's not really uncommon at all. So
before I turn to some of our other guests, you say that your relationship with your coach evolved. You know, you were a young member of that team. You felt some intimidation early. Through a number of different things, your relationship has obviously improved. But what would your message be to, whether it's the coaching community, parents out there who feel that stress? Because now I'm starting to see, my son's only 5, but I'm starting to see other parents who are, they're feeling the stress of, well, my son plays soccer, but his peers are on 2 teams or on 3 travel teams. And so our Saturdays are get up at 6 a.m. and then there's a game here. Then there's a noon game across the county somewhere else. Then there's a 5 p.m. game somewhere else. And it's just, it's constant. And what would you say to parents, to coaches, when you're thinking about the balance out there, if someone just went through it and did it very successfully, but what would you say to them?
I'd say that academics always have to come first in front of athletics, whether that means skipping a practice here or there. It does happen if you can't quite balance it. And to the parents, just really listen to the kids. If they don't love the sport, don't force them to do it, obviously. And if you think that it's possibly a mental thing, I think the mental side of athletics is something that's really not focused on at all. And I think that's huge. So focusing there would also be a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at, even in the professional leagues, it's not taboo anymore. What Lindsay just said, the New York Mets are building one of the biggest mental skills coaching staffs in baseball. And the reports, according to Bloomberg.com, the Mets began rethinking their approach 3 years ago after team psychologist Jeffrey Foote left the team. And they had run a fairly standard employee assistance program, kind of like what companies offer employees, according to Bloomberg. But the team has nearly tripled its mental skills staff to 8 full-time people for the Mets. So that's not taboo. And I think Lindsay's making a really good point that this dovetails with a lot of recent conversations. Mental health is physical health. It's health. But some really wise words from you. What's your best sport, by the way? Or what's your best stroke, by the way?
Distance freestyler. So distance I swim freestyle. Like the mile, all that stuff. That's what I was recruited to swim. So
a mile? What's your best mile time?
16:20.
That is obscene. That's obscene. Lindsay Stone, college-bound swimmer, part of our panel today. I want to ask Dr. Michael Maloney, if I could, who's the director of University Sports Medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center. First of all, how much does her story ring true to you with what you're... Because you deal a lot with injury, and injury from overuse sometimes, but also, you know, I know you're familiar with just the pressure that's out there. How much does this story ring true to you?
Well, it rings true on a couple of levels. Certainly what I see professionally as an orthopedic surgeon dealing with athletes as young as sometimes 7 or 8 years old with injuries. And oftentimes, you know, the physical presentation can be the result of a stress or anxiety. So we have to kind of work through some of those things. See it also as a dad. You have 4 young children who've been active in sports and have had to have some similar discussions about, you know, what do they want to do and make choices. And making it very clear that, you know, unfortunately with their gene pool, no one's going to the NBA or the NFL. Find something you enjoy doing and try to have fun with it. But certainly the stress is pretty high, and it seems to really have been compounded the last 10, 15 years.
The odds of going pro, according to a survey by Michigan State University, just to help kids understand, a high school football player making it to the NFL, 1 in 6,000. High school baseball player making it 1 in 4,000. High school basketball player at the NBA, 1 in 10,000. And the odds of a high school soccer player receiving a full ride to a D1 or 2 school is still only 1 in 90. So, you know, not great on the odds. And then, as you say, it's good to look at your gene pool, too. You can overcome that sometimes. But
absolutely. Hard work.
Yes. But so why don't you tell us, Dr. Maloney, what is coming up with the D Sports Summit? That's coming up when?
It's Tuesday, August 1st at the Memorial Art Gallery. It's a University of Rochester sponsored event. It's our second D Sports Summit. The D is for digital or data. And it's an opportunity to bring leaders in the field of sports medicine, but also data analytics and technology. We're fortunate this year to have some nutrition-minded folks and talking about mindfulness and the importance of sleep and healthy choices overall and the things that young athletes can really do to optimize their performance, but ultimately, as you said, achieve balance and from our standpoint, stay as healthy as possible.
The event is one day. It's August 1st, 2 Tuesdays from now. That's 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the MAG, the Memorial Art Gallery. A keynote from Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
So he's decently known.
Well, he's well known, and I think his story is kind of special because he's overcome adversity at many points in his life, and I think the power of the mind to help in overcoming adversity is a strong one, and I think he'll share some stories in that regard, and he's obviously been inspirational to a lot of people in this area.
And so I just want to kind of read a quick synopsis of the sessions that you have coming up, because it is sort of this interesting look at a lot of different angles on what building good athletes is all about. So breakfast starts, then there's networking and a tech expo, and then here are the sessions. Mindfulness, unlocking the door to your true potential. We're going to be talking about that in just a moment here. Sleep, a secret source of power. Training for top performance. Nutrition, a winning game plan. We're going to get to that. Lunch and cooking demo by Wegmans. Again, another tech expo. Then the Olympic idea, how athletes prepare and compete in the World Games. Physical performance, how technology is advancing training and play with wearable devices. A tech demonstration, virtual reality and augmented reality. Ocular motor monitoring and concussion treatment. The sporting life, how your game skills and smarts can guide your future. The X Factor, what professional scouts look for in winners. That's an interesting one there, Dr. Maloney. A wide range there for you to kind of consider. And so you look at becoming better athletes, understanding technology, becoming more balanced. By the way, Lindsay, what's your sleep schedule? I mean, when you were really performing, and you still are, obviously, you go to Notre Dame for it, but at the peak of the season for you, what is sleep like?
You've really got to try to get in those 8 hours at least.
Would you get 8 hours?
I would try to as much as possible. I know it's hard with homework. Sometimes I'd have to maybe not do an assignment.
Senator Stone, answer the question. Would you get 8 hours?
Not always. But okay. Before a meet, definitely. Sleep is important.
It takes real discipline to get that, doesn't it? With your schedule, as much swimming, as much time in the pool and training, academics, as you said, what you have to come first.
Right.
I mean, you have to really have discipline to get sleep, don't you?
It's a lot. Plus, with the morning practice in the morning, you lose an hour there. So,
Jane Andrews, when it comes to nutrition, how often do you think about how sleep dovetails with all of that?
Oh, my goodness. Certainly in terms of how you feel and how you respond, sleep is huge, mental acuity. But in terms of appetite, don't get enough sleep, you tend to reach for the wrong things and you tend to gain more of the wrong kind of weight.
It's so true. So, I hate to tell people like Lindsay this, but the older you get, the more you are reminded that, oh, I think I can do it on 5 hours is not true. And it catches up to you. And then you do find yourself, waking up and just absolutely crushing like a breakfast sandwich that's probably the worst thing nutritionally you can find. It all kind of plays together. So
yeah.
I want to talk about nutrition. It's one of the sessions there.
I think the key issue for families is that we absolutely know that kids eat better when they eat together, when the families eat together. And when you have a cycle, that every 3 to 5 hours, a meal that has some level of balance. We talk about half plate healthy because of all the great things that you get with fruits and vegetables. And we're learning more about what's in those fruits and vegetables, antioxidants and nitrates, things that help you recover. Protein is a huge issue. So what happens today with a lot of kids, we're seeing eating disorders, and sometimes it's eating disorders among athletes. So what happens to what they eat? What happens when you grab and go and it's the 24-ounce soft drink and you fill up on that? You need the sugar? Well, maybe. Need some, but maybe there's too much. So I think the things that are part of the stress that we heard from Lindsay is a level of stress that the family unit as a total feels. If mom and dad are taking kids to this game and then that game and that game, they're likely to stop at the fast food restaurant. What are they likely to get? Vegetables? Maybe not. So I think that it's all part of the same picture. And as much as we can get that routine that is predictable so that you get the sleep and so that it doesn't stress you out, doesn't have to be cooked from scratch. And that's what we're showing on Tuesday. We're showing how you can assemble simple meals with stuff that you could buy in our prepared foods department, or you can make it at home. But a lot of people just don't have the time, and we want to show how that can go together and so that you don't have to feel guilty. You can have good food, get enough protein, get the other parts that all of your children need, not just the athletes.
You can do it fast without doing fast food.
You can do it fast without doing fast food.
Yeah, and Jane's
that's the message.
Jane's got a pile of things in front of her. So in a second, our listeners can't see them. But I'll ask you to describe them in a moment. I did want to ask you how you feel about the things like the 5-hour energies of the world that we see a lot more of. We see athletes endorsing them. How do you feel about that?
I don't feel, I think that those products, some of which are sources of caffeine, and caffeine has some benefits. But the idea of doing a single fast vitamin C, for example, that's not what folks need. They don't need a single nutrient. There's so many ways that nutrients interact that doing some of those products, I think, are pretty ridiculous.
It just does feel like in recent years, we have seen so many efforts to try to circumvent our bad habits. We're not eating well, so so do a juice cleanse and that'll take the toxins out of your body, even though science doesn't support that. Or you didn't really get sleep, but here's a caffeine shot, here's 5-hour energy. And so it sounds like what you're going to try to do at the D-Sports Summit is to say you don't have to circumvent that in ways that are either pseudoscience or maybe even deleterious to your health, that you can do it fast, but you can do it okay with it.
One of the big things that nutrition science has seen recently is the emergence of focus on protein. And we know protein. Your muscles become protein, right? And so one particular, and this happens to be a local, New York State making a lot of Greek yogurt right now, but the process of making Greek yogurt creates something called whey protein. And so we're seeing lots of people using that whey protein.
Can't you get that in a powder?
You absolutely can. But, you can get it from dairy products.
Yeah.
I never
trust it in a powder, which is, again, silly because I'm not a scientist.
Well, it all depends on what people like. What we've seen, and again, I'm just saying what we see at Wegmans, is that families that start doing smoothies in the morning for breakfast, they start buying a heck of a lot more fruits and vegetables than they've ever purchased before. They're using Greek yogurt as a way of getting that protein in. They're eating it on the go. I mean, there's ways that you can kind of make this work. One of my favorite breakfasts is Greek yogurt with applesauce and cinnamon. Some antioxidants there. Less than $1 for breakfast. Quick. So that's kind of the idea. It feels like a lot of people are looking for the protein right after they exercise, and actually it's getting it within that next 24 hours. And every time you can get at least 20 to 30 grams of protein in a meal, it helps build muscular strength, not just muscles, but also all the other things that are tendons and ligaments and everything else that protein involves. So there's just a lot more nutrition science that I think comes back to some basic protein or basic nutrition reminders of basic healthy eating.
Our guests are talking about the upcoming D-Sport Summit. That is on August 1st, and that's at the Memorial Art Gallery from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And we're talking about balance and sort of just creating optimal athletics for young people, for students. We're going to hear from a couple of other guests in our second half hour. I do want to work in a couple of phone calls, so let me grab Linda in Penfield first. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Evan. I'm directing this specifically towards you. You're doing just fine, okay? You're doing just fine. Your son does not need to be on five different travel teams and three different, activities.
Darn right.
And I want you to listen to me very carefully as a parent, because I was once a parent of a young child myself. Parenting has become a blood sport in that there are parents who, since the time children are small, are comparing them and encouraging them to compete with each other. And, well, how many AP classes are you taking? Mm-hmm. And how many sports are you in? And how many times a week are you home? And we've lost the sense, especially with little children, of just letting them play. And I wonder sometimes with all of this focus on sports and academics and, my child has to have more of this or that, that is it really for the kid or is it for the parent, really? Because I'm telling this to all the parents out there, people, you're doing just fine, okay? One sport at a time, one activity at a time, you're doing just fine. So thanks for letting me get that out, Evan.
Linda, thank you.
You're doing fine.
Thank you, Linda. Mic drop. That is the awesome comment. I love that. That's Linda. Thank you. And I wonder, Lindsay, how do you feel about that? Again, we're not going to talk about your family and your parents. And it sounds like, again, you've built really healthy relationships with the people around you. But again, just observationally, without mentioning names, do you agree with her that occasionally parents can be the source of some of this drive for schedules and competition?
I do agree. I think that with all the stresses, there's personal stress that you put on yourself, but your parents can also add to that. I know personally mine have definitely made sure not to, but out there's definitely a lot of that. Parents who put their kids in a certain sport because they played it or they like it, things like that, you see that a lot.
So. I mean, I think about your parents saying, hey, before you quit, let's talk to a sports psychologist. Number one, I think that's great because we talk so often about stigma of just talking to people and, psychology, therapy, et cetera, as if there's something wrong with it. And we have to detonate that. Your parents took a step to that right away and just wanted you to have good mental health with it. So I think that's great. But Linda, I can relate. And again, I won't name names, but I think even of my own childhood, I think of my brother and his sons who are a little bit older and his frustration because they're wonderful athletes. But my goodness, the pressure is just constant. So great reminder, Linda. Thank you. Let me grab Robert in Austin, Texas, who's calling. Calling from Austin, Texas, Robert.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I know concussions are a big topic now, and there's a lot of focus on helmets and a few other things, but I've seen some of the research around neck strength that's come out really the last couple of years as a proactive approach to lowering concussion risk. And I'm just curious, what any of the panel members have seen around this and, if neck strength is something that should be getting more attention, not just from coaches and trainers, but, from moms and dads.
All right, Robert, stay there because what I want to do is I want to relay your comment to Dr. Maloney, who didn't have headphones on, but he's the director of University Sports Medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center. And you're saying that you're reading that what you're hearing is one way to sort of mitigate the number of concussions is to build neck strength. Is that what you're hearing? Robert?
I've seen a few studies on it. I know Dr. Bob Cantu, he's one of the leading neurologists that works with the NFL, and he's been associated with lowering the soccer heading ban of 11 and younger. So, just curious kind of how that builds, not even just for football, but really you know, looking at all types of contact sports where you have that type of, you know, high-speed impact.
Yeah, so Robert, stay there. Concussion treatment is one of the many sessions coming up at the D-Sports Summit on August 1st. And Dr. Maloney, he's saying that, number one, he's reading that building neck strength is a way that maybe to mitigate concussions, and also sort of looking at what we do at a younger age. He's thinking of, you know, banning soccer headers for 11 and 12-year-olds, you know, that kind of a thing. So why don't we start there? Go ahead.
Well, the issue with younger athletes is if you look at the young children, the head is disproportionately larger to their body as opposed to when they become adults. And having a larger head with a smaller body means there's more demand on the muscles to control that. So it is well known that in football and in soccer, the younger the athletes, where they don't have as much muscle control or strength, or they're growing and developing rapidly, that they are at greater risk for sustaining head and neck injuries. And a program that focuses on strength and balance and endurance of the muscles around the neck will be helpful.
Okay. You want to follow up there, Robert?
That's something that just logically makes sense. You know, kind of a larger head, or even you're putting in some of the sports, increasing the mass on that head, just more stabilizing forces seems like it would help. So appreciate the response there.
Yeah, Robert, thank you. I appreciate the phone call. 844-295-TALK if you want to join the discussion this hour. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. After our only break of the hour, we're going to bring in Erica Denman, owner and founder of Balance Fitness and Yoga in Webster, an instruction specialist with the Webster Central School District. She has been leading mindfulness in all 11 of Webster schools. Is that right?
That's right.
All right,
yes.
So we're going to talk mindfulness when we come back here as well. And we're going to talk to Kayla Purcell, student athlete at Webster Schrader High School as well. Take more of your comments as we talk about athletics, building great young athletes, but also understanding balance from all angles. It's coming up on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Monday on the Next Connections. In our first hour, we sit down with some of the leaders of the Center for Dispute Settlement in Rochester. They work on police accountability and review cases. And they have been defensive of the current system after some criticism this summer. We'll talk about that. Then in our second hour, the African-American trans community. They say we should know who their allies are, and we should be talking about violence targeting their community. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I should have let you know, or just reminded you, the D-Sports Summit that's coming up, you can still register, and that's at urmc.rochester.edu. So the regular website of URMC, then dash D-Sports. And that way you can check out much more about the different seminars, things that are coming up that day. That's Tuesday, August 1st. And the different price breaks down for students, professionals, leaders. You can all check it out there. Again, urmc.rochester.edu/D-Sports to check out the summit that is coming up from 8 to 4:30 at the MAG two Tuesdays from now. Let me say hello again to Erica Denman and Kayla Purcell, who Erica is the owner and founder of Balance Fitness and Yoga in Webster and an instruction specialist with the Webster Central School District. Kayla is a student athlete at Webster Schrader High School. Get more specific, Kayla. What year are you and what do you play?
I'm going to be a senior this year, and I'm a three-sport athlete. I play soccer, basketball, and lacrosse, and I play it year-round.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You play year-round travel?
Yeah, I play travel and club sports as well as school.
Okay, so is there ever a time of year where you're not involved with something?
Not really. I mean, soccer's in the summer, lacrosse in the spring, soccer in the spring, basketball, it's all year-round.
Okay, so let's go back to growing up. Were you an athlete, you know, right out of the gate?
Yeah, I actually started playing soccer when I was 3 years old, basketball a little later, and lacrosse a little bit later than that. So as long as I can remember, I've always been playing sports.
And playing organized sports as well, yeah?
Yes.
Did you remember, even at those young ages, wanting to do it? Was that what fired you up? You wanted to do as much of that as you could?
Yeah, I actually went to my parents when I was 3 years old and said I wanted to play soccer, and they were like, are you sure? You know, you're pretty young, and I was 100% sure I wanted to go out there and start as soon as possible.
Did it ever feel like too much for you over the years?
Definitely, especially those seasons where I'm in season for all three sports. I've had a few injuries. I've torn my ACL due to overuse, and that kind of put things into perspective. I now know my limits. I know when I need to stop, when I need to give my body a break, but it took a lot to get to that point.
What do you do about this heavy schedule that a lot of parents and a lot of families and student athletes have to deal with to feel competitive? I mean, again, you're a multi-sport athlete, but some of your peers stick to one sport and they feel like, if I'm going to excel at this sport, I have to do it year-round. I have to be on multiple teams, club teams. I have to get, if we can afford it, we'll have to hire, you know, professional training. What do we do about that?
A lot of it is time budgeting and just knowing your body. I mean, I know when I'm in one sport for a long time, I can feel certain parts of my body wearing down, and then I'll go to a different sport and I'll start using different parts of my body. So I like that I play all three sports because it definitely works different parts of my body at different times of the year. But the time budgeting does come in when you need to figure out when to do homework and when you need to take a break. So it comes with time, but being someone who's really, really young doing that, I don't see how they could, you know, understand that.
How about sleep?
Sleep is a problem, especially with school, because like Lindsay said, there's a lot of assignments that'll take you until midnight, and you'll have to either not do it or stay up late. So it depends on the time of the year, but I try to get 8 hours every night.
Do you ever have a day, like a weekend day or a summer day, where you wake up and go, I got the day to myself, I got nothing on the calendar?
Yeah, this summer I've actually had a lot more time to myself than I had in the previous summers, and it's kind of weird.
Like, it's weird to have free time?
Yeah, it is. I'll have days that practices are canceled after school, and I'll go home and I'll be like, what do I do now? So I'm kind of in the groove of things. I mean, I just turned 17. I've been doing it for several years now. It's kind of the norm for me.
Kayla, years ago, kids had free time all the time.
I know.
And they didn't even, like, parents didn't even get prosecuted for it. You were just allowed to have free time.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. But when you say weird, you know, uncomfortable?
Not uncomfortable, just...
Unusual.
Yeah, unusual, uncommon for me. I mean, I love it. My parents have always told me that I don't need to do it. I only need to do what I want to do. And they're very supportive, you know, all the traveling and stuff. But it's weird not to do something that you've been doing for so long.
Well, I appreciate Kayla's honesty. She's a student athlete at Webster Schrader High School. Erica Denman from Balance Fitness and Yoga in Webster. So let's talk about mindfulness and how you think it fits into all of this, because you're so involved in different ways in this community. But let's talk about mindfulness.
Okay. One of the things that's come up as I'm listening to everyone speak is, you know, balance and being uncomfortable and enough sleep and nutrition and making choices that are responsive rather than reactive. And I think that in so many ways, mindfulness is this umbrella of strategies and awareness that supports all of the work, whether it's the right choices in nutrition or how to rest your mind to get sleep, because it's not just about having the hours. It's about the what happens mentally when you lay down and your head starts to swirl.
So define mindfulness then.
Yeah.
So you knew that was coming.
I knew that was coming. I'm glad that I reviewed it. No. Mindfulness is being in the present moment in a particular way on purpose without judgment. That's a Jon Kabat-Zinn quote.
And don't you think, honestly, it's got to be harder for student athletes today because, number one, as you just heard Kayla say, that there is very little free time, or for a lot of students now. They're used to their schedule being packed morning to night. And to the extent that they have free time, you could fill it with technology. I mean, you can be on technology all the time. So being in that sort of present moment, kind of relaxing, it would have to be harder, I would think, for student athletes than it used to be.
Yeah, I would think that it's, and from my work with the students, that it's a purposeful choice. It's this, you know, Kayla brought up a noticing of how her body feels. You know, mindfulness brings up that ability to embody it and understand, like, wow, this is what's happening inside of me, and I'm going to make a choice to rest. And it's the same idea with technology. I'm noticing that I'm getting really worked up about this, or I've lost an hour in just my phone. And it's the recognition and awareness of that, which is that you go into habitual patterns of doing things, and mindfulness kind of slows that down.
You might have seen the Democrat and Chronicle had Erica as one of the women to watch and mentioned that the Webster Central School District incorporated your programs not necessarily to drive sports sort of success or final results, but just to address student stress. Is that right?
Yeah. So there was a survey that came out that identified the stress levels of students. And then what do we do about that? And so the position came about, and mindfulness was that focus.
How did that, by the way, when was that? How far back we go now?
So I've been a year into the position.
Okay, and so how do you then end up incorporating that? Things are already busy, and you've got to work with people who might not even know what mindfulness is. So kind of take me through what you ended up doing over the last year.
With the district?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like you said, it's not just with athletes, it's K-12. And it really has been this exploration. And teachers will invite me into their classrooms, and I'll work with kindergartners on teaching them how to breathe, which fascinates my father because it's like, people know how to do that, getting paid to do that. But it's the recognition of how to use your breath and getting to know your body. And so whatever the strategies are at whatever age, it really is just the awareness of that. So I'll go into classrooms and work with students, work with teachers on that, whether that's for their own personal practice or for professional, because the overall health and well-being of our staff and faculty and administrative and all of our staff, not just for them, but for the experience of the kids, right? And so it's really an entire district initiative and exploration where we're practicing mindfulness. It's the practice of it, because what you practice becomes stronger.
And it starts at the K level.
Yeah, it starts with kindergarten.
How do they do?
They're great. They, at the end of the year, actually, we brought in our upper administration, and the students taught them how to do things like breathing and mindful walking and mindful eating. So Jane, that worked out well. And just all sorts of strategies that they have loved. It's very innate in kids. And it's just, I think that what we're doing in Webster is bringing out something that they just already know. So my day is anywhere from kindergarten to an AP physics class where we use yoga and physics to teach lessons. It's all over the board.
Tell me a little bit about how you do that.
it's first of all, I was an English teacher, so I cannot believe they let me even down that portion of the hallway.
I love that.
but we use, the physics teachers reached out to me. They're very concerned about their student stress level, first of all. So we use strategies, breathing and stress management for them. But also while I'm there, putting them in poses and doing different measurements. And instead of using manipulatives, they use their bodies to explore where your center of mass is. And it's a phrase I did not know. It's all very new to me.
Totally sincere question. I mean, do you mean then that when they're in class, they may be in tree for a while?
Yeah.
Or like stuff like that?
Yeah. So the labs are like live labs using their bodies for their lessons, which has been really cool. Yeah.
And what have you heard over the last 12 months from individual students? Have they told you that it's affected them?
Absolutely. I think, and I'm sure Kayla can also respond to this from the work we've done, but one of the things that the student athletes, to swing back to that, have said to me is it's really nice to have somebody say to us, you don't have to do anything right now. Like, you know, just that kind of mindfulness meditation, that stillness, that whether it's a few moments or we do a longer little mindfulness meditation, to have the invitation to just rest. And I think that piece has spoken a lot. It also translates so beautifully off the field, right? Like learning how to respond when you're uncomfortable or when you notice something in your body is going to react a certain way and you now know what to do with that and how to respond.
I want to hit on this point and ask you a question for selfish reasons, but okay. I hope people can relate to this. First of all, the great philosopher Louis C.K. said that he thinks modern technology has made people unable or unwilling to actually just feel emotion. That the second we clear our heads and we just sort of breathe and we start thinking about things, if anything actually starts to feel emotional, we say, well, I can't feel that. I'm gonna check Facebook. I'm going to check my email. You know, I'm going to call somebody. As opposed to just being in a moment, or being solitary, but just feeling whatever that is. I was just thinking of that comment. And then I thought of myself recently. Yeah, you get home from work, lay down on the bed, and just for a second go, I just want to take 5 minutes. But then I thought, I have so much work to be doing for tomorrow, or I could be going for a run, or there's so many things that I feel like I could be checking a box because I make these lists. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm wasting time. And so it's not just, I mean, I was sort of like picking on kids for, and I hope Kayla knows I wasn't picking on her, you know, you know, because I admire her and student athletes, you know, have so much on their plates. But it's me too. How do we get to a point where we don't feel like we are wasting time if we are not literally checking a box off a list every second?
So I'm glad you brought this up, because one of the main concepts that we work on, whether it's athletes or little ones or adults, is the getting comfortable being uncomfortable and you, you know, kind of spoke of that. The idea is that when you're uncomfortable, you want to do something that gets you out of that space. So from a, you know, flight, fight, freeze kind of idea, just from that space. But also, like, can you just sit with the discomfort of feeling something, feeling an emotion, talking with coaches and whether it's coaches or with a relationship at work or something that you're dealing with, we want our athletes to maintain composure. All right, how do you teach that? You know, like 1, 2, 3, composure is not getting us there. So the idea of when you're breathing in and breathing out and you feel anxious and you want to respond a certain way, what's it feel like? And you start to notice it, and it really enables the nervous system, right, to get comfortable with that, because the most natural thing, like you said, or the philosopher Louis C.K. said, is that you don't want to feel certain things. And so I would suggest that in those times where you think, you know what, I need to get up and do something, to start to let yourself just sit with it and get to know it, because there's a pretty strong power in getting to know discomfort.
Nice. It's awesome. Erica Denman, owner and founder of Balance Fitness and Yoga in Webster, among other things. And you mentioned, you know, you work with students like Kayla. So can I ask you how you feel about these concepts?
Well, she's actually come into my physics class once, and we did the lab that she was talking about. And it was a nice break, because you're used to going into class and, like, sitting down, taking notes, doing labs where you're measuring everything out. But it was nice to just sit back and relax. And when we have a practice and we see Ms. Denman is on the schedule, you know, everyone gets excited, because there's a break between after school or after practice when you think about all the assignments you have to do that night, and you can just relax. And later that night when you're doing assignments, you can just think of that and go back to it and bring yourself back to that space, so you can be a little less stressed.
So two things, Erica. First of all, do you know how rare it is for high school kids to view adults as being cool? I mean, like, that's like a huge thing.
I'm on borrowed time.
I know. Borrowed time. But it has to be intrinsically just amazing to you to hear students talk about the way that's impacting the way they think. I mean, what does that mean to you to hear that from a student like that?
You know, it speaks to the work of mindfulness. So, you know, I'm going to humbly kind of bow to that, and the fact that it's getting to know themselves and getting to know that there is something inside of them that they can go back to, that space of calming down. But I mean, I've been in education for a long time, and as an English teacher, I can assure you that I did not hear those words always. So it keeps me going, and I'm so grateful. It's not just work to me. It's really amazing.
And now let me ask Kayla from the athletic perspective on this, because we're here because we got the D-Sport Summit coming up, and mindfulness is one of the subjects that they're going to be discussing there. How does this apply to you as a student athlete?
Well, on the field and on the court, I used to be one of those athletes that would get wrapped up in the game, and I tend to foul out a lot in basketball.
You tend to foul out?
Yeah.
Because of emotion?
Emotions, everything else. It would just all get to me. And one thing Mrs. Denman has taught me is just to move on, realize that if it's happened in the past, you can't change it. You just have to accept it and be mindful about it. And it's really helped me create a stronger bond with my teammates on and off the field, with my coaches, to just be more mindful in the game.
You think you're going to take this with you when you're out of high school?
Definitely. I'm looking to play, hopefully, basketball in college, and I mean, college is hard. Everyone knows that. So being mindful will definitely help me in the future.
We're talking about the upcoming D-Sports Summit, and Rachel on Twitter says, great panel today on a very important subject. I hope school districts are paying attention and sending coaches and ADs to the summit. Let me ask Dr. Michael Maloney, Director of University Sports Medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center, who's been telling us about the upcoming D-Sports Summit. That's on August 1st, a couple of Tuesdays from now. At the MAG, the Memorial Art Gallery. You know, Rachel's mentioning she hopes to see ADs and district directors there. Who is this really aimed at?
Really for all those folks. You know, we have an athletic training outreach program through University Sports Medicine that connects with 21 or 2 of the high schools here in Section 5 in Monroe County. So we've sent invitations to all the athletic directors and coaches, and hopefully that gets passed along to the athletes as well. I was at Roland Williams Champion Academy earlier in the week, and I talked to Roland about kind of identifying 20 of his, you know, high school athletes and have them coming as well. And so I really think it's open to athletes, coaches, trainers, but I think anyone who can kind of relate to these different things and how health and wellness is evolving and how technology can be useful and can be helpful. And, you know, people who want to try to strive to be better at what they want to do and have maybe achieved balance in some ways already, but just want to kind of excel. So I think everyone can kind of find different things in the event that'll be useful.
I'm not going to quiz you on your mindfulness, Dr. Maloney, or even whether you use things like yoga. I have the flexibility of a cinder block. I need things like yoga in my life probably to improve that. I'm hearing Kayla, I'm hearing Lindsay, I'm hearing so much from what Jane's talking about, all these ideas that I feel like I could incorporate better into my own life. And I'm curious to know if you, because you're a parent as well, parent of four, you said, right? So you have the parent hat on, you also have the doctor's hat on, the sports medicine hat on. Do you think we will get to a point where we won't get phone calls in future generations about it's a parent war, it's not necessarily just the students, it's very competitive, sometimes it's parents projecting. Are we pulling it back a little with stuff like this, or do you think that's always going to be there?
It's really kind of ratcheted up quite a bit in the last, you know, decade or two, and there's a lot of pressure that young athletes feel to excel, and not only satisfying their parents or coaches, but their peers and kind of how they identify themselves. So hopefully this is an opportunity for people to kind of, you know, explore some different things and understand themselves better and maybe achieve that balance and realize, you know, obviously, you know, Lindsay's been very successful with one sport and a little bit of a curse. I mean, at 12 years old, competing against varsity athletes, and that's pretty stressful. And so, you know, kudos to her to overcome, and her parents, obviously, for identifying that. And so there are certainly athletes who are going to achieve and going to go on and be very successful. But for the rest of us, you know, understanding what sports is about and the lessons that we hope to learn from playing sports maybe are more important than the, you know, success in getting to a scholarship or whatever level, you know, our parents or coaches might have for us.
All right. Raquel sends an email and just wants to know about nutrition. Says, Evan, you've been talking about nutrition. I've read that Michael Phelps used to do 10,000 calories a day and a lot of chocolate chip pancakes. Is that true? And what does your swimmer eat? All right, Lindsay. I want to ask both Jane and Lindsay if the Michael
Sounds
Phelps thing.
Sounds like 4 to 5 hours of swimming a day could ramp up a lot of calories.
So do you know what your caloric intake is?
I don't keep track of
you
it.
Haven't kept track?
I did for a little bit. I know my coach has told us when we're in summer training where it's 20 hours a week or preseason where it's 20 hours a week, he said anywhere between 4,000 to 5,000 calories based on his practices and what he puts forth for us. So it's a lot, and that's something that I've definitely struggled with because the healthier the food, things like lettuce and cucumber don't necessarily have as many calories as something like a burger that isn't as great to be eating. So. And I'm pretty sure it is true about Michael Phelps with the 10,000 calories, because I know he swims quite a bit.
Yeah. So Jane, this is, I'm really glad Raquel sent this email, because as a nutrition manager for Wegmans, I wanted to ask if it's true that Michael Phelps is doing that, you know, he's just got this stack of chocolate chip pancakes. If you are working out that much, if you are that active, does that give you a blank check to at least
not
have...
Not a blank check, but it sure helps.
To, like, you know, say, you know, normally you wouldn't want to be doing this, but...
Well, I think just as Lindsay was saying, the how you get those calories in after you get the basic of balanced, healthy eating...
Yeah, I doubt Michael Phelps is only eating chocolate chip pancakes. There's probably a lot of other nutritional
things. I guess the other thing, just listening to these two young women speak, I couldn't help but think about where's the joy, how much fun they're having with the other people that they're with. And I can imagine that the team itself gives you a lot of support. Does it? Are you feeling joy?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I know definitely. Swimming is more of an independent sport, but I love high school season, which is really that team aspect. And that's what a lot of college is going to be like. And the support that I've gotten gets you through practice, it gets you through meets. It's really
the reason a lot of us are envious of that, and I think you need to remember that there's some really great things going on. At the same time, a lot of us, and as you get older, you might be less active, you know, and sometimes activity in itself is a stress reducer. So it's all about that balance thing, and the great habits that you develop now you can live with in the next 10. You know, you guys had Title IX, so sports are a possibility. 50 years ago for me, women weren't in these sports. You've really been given huge blessings. Well, so just trying to cheer you up, because it sounds like a very serious topic. And
it was such a great question, too, because we didn't talk about joy this hour. And that should be what it's about. It should be about doing valuable things that do bring you ultimately some connection and some happiness. And so Lindsay says yes. You say yes as well, Kayla?
Definitely. Most of my closest relationships I've met through sports. And I played high school sports when I was in middle school, and I came to the high school knowing so many people. Mm-hmm. It's gave me so many opportunities.
Erica, in my brain, I just went, well, don't send the message that stress is all bad. I mean, there's probably good stress and bad stress. I mean, generally speaking, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I was thinking about the chocolate chip pancakes bringing joy.
Swimming.
Yeah. But there's definitely, I mean, there's a. It's not about getting rid of stress. It's about navigating stress, right? And in so many ways, stress pumps you up and gets you going and heads you in a direction you need to go. Yeah, so there's good stress and bad stress, and forgive me because it is a studio name, but and it's what keeps coming up is balance, is finding the way to navigate through all of that.
That's okay. I've said connection several times. That's the name of the show. We do that all the time. I just want to thank our panel for a great discussion, and hopefully, I hope that if you are a parent, if you are not a parent, no matter what it is, I'm thinking of what Erica and Jane and Michael and Kayla and Lindsay said, and so much of this applies to your life, even outside of the athletics part. It's just such interesting stuff. But if you want to check out the D-Sports Summit, once again, you can still register. Get online to do that. Go to URMC's website there, and D-Sports. The summit coming up two Tuesdays from now, from 8 to 4:30 at the MAG, the Memorial Art Gallery. You can still register online. And thanks to everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Wonderful way to end the week. So great success and good health to all of you. We appreciate that. John Andrus is the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you do have a lovely weekend. And we're right back with you Monday on member-supported public radio.